killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, hello, and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Bros. I am Danny, and I'm joined with
Rory.
And guys, guess what? Do you know what?
What?
Glory bought me sweets. He bought me my jelly babies 2 years later. He just randomly pulled them out one day and was like, here. And I was like, wait, what? And I was half asleep when he did it as well. So I don't know what happening.
I can't believe she just chooses to air out our business on the podcast.
No, guys.
Not the topic of discussion.
No, but your debt has been paid. You're no longer in debt.
Christ paid all my debt.
You know what? He's not talking nonsense, but in this case, you're talking nonsense. So today we are dealing with Israel Keyes. He was an American serial killer who is believed to have murdered 11 people between 2001 and 2012. Now, for me, guys, 11 years, you kill 11 people, one a year, that's a pretty bad average. I'm just saying. 11 people is bad, but it's a bad average for 11 years. You get me?
If it goes on long enough, you know how many people you would have killed?
Yeah, but there's some people who killed 11 in a year. Like, what's up?
What do you mean, what's up? She's out here.
It's a bad average.
Promoting death.
Oh, it's not. No.
Do you work for life insurance?
No.
I'm just checking.
No, I did not. But Israel Keyes was born in Cove, Utah on January the 7th, 1978, as the second of 10 children, a whole soccer team, born to Heidi and John Jeffrey Keyes. The couple didn't believe in government interference, public schools, or modern medicine. So already, they're a little bit weirdos. So Israel was 5 when his family left Utah for Colville, Washington, and they lived isolated in the woods where Keyes grew up without heat or electricity. The poor child. While in Washington, Keyes' parents left the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints and became fundamentalist Christians and joined a white supremacist church called the Ark. In the late 1990s, the families relocated to Oregon. It was there where Keyes said he attacked his first victim, though he didn't kill her. His family then moved again, this time across the country, to an Amish community in Maine. Guys, the Amish people make me confused. I don't understand.
What do you mean?
I don't know. And confused is the wrong word. Once we were at camp and there were Amish people there, it was very weird. We all just were like, what? Because you know they don't believe in like medicine or like electricity or Wi-Fi, you know.
Okay.
I think that's my biggest problem, Wi-Fi. But growing up, Keyes broke into neighbors' homes to steal guns, and he used to love hunting and torturing animals, which linked to his psychotic behavior. After he became a teenager, he told his family that he no longer shared their faith, and they evicted him from their house. And the siblings were told never to speak to him again. On July 9th, 1998, Keyes relocated to New York, where he enlisted in the Army, where he was then stationed in Fort Hood in Texas, then Fort Lewis in Washington, and then in Egypt. However, there were no crimes reported during his time in Egypt, but he did tell one soldier that he would like to kill him. I had someone say that to me once. It was not fun. I was studying for an exam, and we were studying with this girl, and she said, you know, sometimes I just think how much my life would be better if I pushed you off the balcony.
Wow.
Guys, I never walked by the balcony again. I walked up against the classroom windows on the opposite side. And I would walk with people. I was like, I'm not falling off this balcony. You can forget it. In 2000, Keyes became involved with a woman living on the Washington Macaw Reservation. The next year, their daughter, whose name has never been revealed to the public, was born. In July 2001, Keys went to... I would be 1 year younger than this daughter. That's very weird for me. Yeah. Keys went on to live with the mother and the child after being honorably discharged from the army, and he then became a worker in the Makar Tribal Council in Ney Bay from 2001 to 2007. In 2007, Keys moved to Alaska to live with a nurse practitioner, which he had began dating, and brought his daughter along with him. That same year, he started his own business called Keys Construction, where he worked as a handyman, contractor, and a construction worker. On one thing, he is very innovative. He didn't just sit still. On February 1st, 2012, Keys abducted 18-year-old barista Samantha Koenig. Koenig? I think it's Koenig, but I could be wrong, and I apologize if I'm saying it wrong. From the coffee shop where she worked in Anchorage, Alaska. He stole her debit card, her cell phone, sexually assaulted her, and killed her the following day. Keys then stashed her body in a shed while he went on a planned vacation on a two-week cruise to the Gulf of Mexico. Imagine just killing someone and then, oh, let's all go on holiday, everyone. You know, well, there's a dead lady in our shed rotting away. Oh, it must have smelled really bad when they got back, because 2 weeks is quite a while for a body to decompose. Yuck. Upon returning, Keys applied makeup to her face, sewed her eyes open with fishing line, and took a picture of her alongside a four-day-old newspaper called the Anchorage Daily News to make it seem like she was still alive. Using her cell phone, Keys then sent texts including the demand for $30,000 ransom, where because her family was hoping that she was still alive, they deposited the money into her account.
Yeah.
Then Keys dismembered her body and dropped the pieces into a lake north of Anchorage. And her remains were then recovered on April 2nd, 2012. And although Samantha wasn't Keys' first victim, this is actually what led to his downfall. Keys is believed to have killed 11 people, of whom only Samantha Koenig and two others have been identified as, like, official. He also sexually assaulted a girl who was between the ages of 14 and 18. According to Keys, his first planned attack took place in 1997 in Oregon. He abducted a teenage girl, raped her, and intended to murder her, but she convinced him to let her go. And this, when he said he believed he wasn't violent enough in that part of his life, but he'd made up his mind never to let them go again. Yeah. Yeah. As a serial killer, Keys targeted victims who happened to cross his path rather than sticking to a specific profile. So he wasn't killing people with blonde hair or with green eyes or who were tall. No, he was just basically anyone who crossed his path and he saw opportunity. He was like, you, that one, you're mine. And he often waited to accost people in parks, cemeteries, or campgrounds. You see, guys, this is why I don't go to cemeteries. These things do happen there. I'm just saying.
It sounds like someone will just come in.
You never know. Those places are freaky.
Fair enough.
Then you go there and you... Oh, I just get the heebie-jeebies when I go to those places. Keys also traveled to kill. In June 2011, he flew to Chicago before driving to Essex, Vermont, where he murdered Bill and Lorraine Currier. The couple was selected randomly as they fit Keys' criteria of not having no children, no dog, and a house that had an attached garage. He broke into their home, subdued them, and then transported the pair to an abandoned farmhouse. Keys killed Bill, then raped Lorraine before murdering her.
Hmm?
Yeah. Yeah. Keys claimed he took at least five other lives, but never named these victims. Per his account, he killed four people in Washington State, a couple sometime between 2001 and 2005, as well as two separate victims in 2005 and 2006. Keys also stated he murdered someone on the East Coast in 2009 and left the body in New York State. Now, you see, this was his thing. He didn't kill in one place, so this is why it was so hard to catch him over the 11 years. Because he'd kill in Chicago, then he'd kill in New York, then he'd kill here, then he'd kill there, then he'd kill in Alaska. It becomes, and that becomes very difficult, especially when there's nothing to connect the victims together. Speculation about other possible Keys victims has included a girl named Julie Harris, who disappeared in Colville, Washington in 1996. Her prosthetic feet were found a month after she vanished, but her remains were found in 1997. Keys was in the area when Harris went missing, but denied any involvement. Keys has also been posited as responsible for other unsolved crimes, such as the murders of 56-year-old Mary Cooper and her 27-year-old daughter Susan Stodden, who were shot while hiking in Washington State in 2006. After he was caught, Keys spoke of the killing less than a dozen while in jail. Now please listen to this. He used his own blood to draw 12 skulls, which might represent his 11 victims and then him himself. And in 2020, the FBI agent said, "We believe that 11 is the total number of victims." The murderer also said he had intended to leave Alaska and travel through regions to find new victims while working as a contractor. Keyes' serial killing incorporated detailed planning. He crisscrossed the country to hide caches of murder equipment. So he literally went to places, dug holes, hid guns and ammunition and chemicals and whatever he needed, and then he would like leave it there until he needed it to come and kill someone.
Yeah, this guy's something else.
That's really disturbing. Keyes had a history of trips that covered a lot of ground in the United States, meaning he had many opportunities to seek out victims. Foreign journeys to Canada, Mexico, and Belize might have played another part in Keyes' killing spree. While on the road, Keyes paid in cash and took the battery out of his cell phone to lessen the chances of being tracked. In addition to the money he made as a contractor, he also funded his travel through bank robberies. You know, because why not? After Samantha Kuning's family paid the ransom, Keyes used her ATM card to withdraw the funds in Alaska. He then continued these transactions while traveling in New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. And during a visit with his mother and some siblings in Texas, one of his sisters tried to get him to reconsider his atheism. But he said, and I quote, "You don't know the depth of darkness that I've gone to. You don't know what I've done." Hmm. Well, luckily for him, God does forgive all if you repent, but you need to repent. So, and you might still have had to have gone to jail. I'm not saying you would have got off of that, but Keyes disguised his appearance when stealing Koenig's ransom money, but a security camera recorded an image of his rental car in Arizona. Texas law enforcement were then notified, and in March 2012, they stopped Keyes. A search of the vehicle revealed Koenig's license, among other incriminating evidence. Keyes was arrested and eventually brought back to Alaska and confronted with evidence tying him to Koenig's disappearance. He confessed to the crime, and the killing was at odds with his usual careful planning, but he told law enforcement that he'd been falling out of control. So obviously with all the other killings, he was very, not professional, that's the wrong word, but very organized, detail, and that's why he wasn't got caught. But obviously I do think this does take a toll on you. You know, killing people might have a little bit of a toll on your soul, just a little bit, you know. And I think that's probably why he started to feel he had lost control of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. While in custody, Keyes shared some detail about his crimes with investigators, though he seemed to enjoy limiting the information. He'd offered the details about the Curry killings as a bargaining chip with law enforcement, though he largely stopped cooperating after his identity was released and discussed in the media. He had said he didn't want his mother or his daughter to suffer because of his crimes. Despite not being sentenced or even having gone to trial, Keyes expressed his desire for a quick execution date, saying he dreaded life behind bars. In May 2012, Keyes tried to escape from the courtroom after breaking his leg irons during a routine hearing. However, authorities were able to subdue him with a stun gun and then restrained him. Keyes had been awaiting a trial in March 2013 and had been assigned a public defender in Alaska, and his trial would have likely been delayed, however, as federal prosecutors were thinking of pursuing the death penalty. Keyes' body was discovered in his Anchorage, Alaska cell on the morning of December 2nd, 2012. His death was a result of suicide. Despite warnings not to provide him with a razor blade, Keys was given one, and he slit his wrists and also strangled himself with a sheet while lying in bed. Along with the skulls that Keys had drawn in blood, authorities found a four-page suicide note beneath his body. He tried to rhyme it, but didn't do a great job. Message: Keys criticized American consumerism and banality of daily life and seemed to celebrate his murders. And one of the sections said, "You may have been free. You may loved living your life. Fate has its own scheme. Crushed like a bug till you bug you still die." So he's a bit of a psychopath.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And Key's mother, four sisters, and the three brothers-in-laws were the only people who attended his funeral on December 8th, 2012. I'm not surprised he killed himself.
Yeah.
He's a psychopath. And he liked being in control, and he liked that feeling. And so not knowing what his fate was, or leaving his fate up to other people, probably was killing him inside.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that he ended up killing himself. Although the blood skulls are a little bit weird.
Mm.
Maybe that's why there's 12 skulls. Because there's 11 people he killed. And then he's the 12th person he killed. Because he killed himself.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
The game ends with him.
That's really weird. I'm sorry. If I was a prison guard and I came in there and there were these 12 blood drawn skulls, I would have quit my job right there. Hoping like, nope.
Sorry, so who's protecting the people?
Ooh, what people? You're in prison.
Yes, who's watching over?
Then someone else gets hired, but I'm saying no thanks.
Sorry, then you don't deserve to be a prison warden.
Although, I won't lie. Prisons are scary. I'd never work in a prison.
Yeah.
Even the girl prisons, they look scary. Those girls are crazy inside there.
Yeah, look, if you work in a ladies' prison, you have to be really...
Yeah, as I
a
feel lady, like they're worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, no thanks.
Must go to like, you know, army training.
Because I know in like guys' prison, if like girl journalists and stuff come in, they like can't walk near the bars because the guys try to grab them.
Yeah.
And they can't wear like skirts and stuff.
Yeah.
I commend those people who work in the prisons, like anywhere, the kitchens or even in like...
Because guess what? You think some of those ladies don't hit on the wood, on the prison wood.
But okay, so at an all-male prison, right? I'd assume it's all-male guards, right?
Maybe.
Then at a female prison, would it be all-female guards? Wait, let me Google this. Are there male guards at female prisons?
It'd be interesting to find out, although I do believe for the most part.
Like the people who go and do missionary in prisons,
unless it's male,
I commend them. Cause I
unless it's cute. Male.
Yes, there are male officers working in women's prisons.
Yeah.
But you know, do you know... And sometimes also think, though, the guards and stuff... I know there's been many cases where guards and stuff end up abusing their power.
Because
they, like... Then, like, no, we better than you, you filthy prisoner type of vibe. But, like, those prisons in, like, Mexico and stuff, they just look so scary. And there's also female staff members that also can work in male prisons. Oh, it could not be me.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you're, like, doctors and stuff in those, like, infirmaries... There are females.
Yeah, it would just depend on the role. Because, I mean, you could be working in a prison as a receptionist or something. Janitor.
Oh, no, imagine having to clean the prison cell. Oh.
Although, don't the prisoners clean the toilets themselves?
No, they probably have to clean their own cell. That's probably part of their, like, to-do list. Although, it must be so gross in there.
Not necessarily, because they would be forced to keep order.
Okay, think about this, right? Like, imagine this situation. Sometimes we have water shortages, right? Imagine a water shortage at a prison. Now, all those cells' toilets are open. All standing there.
You don't have to think about that.
No, but that's what I was thinking about.
Surely they do have a way of draining the stuff.
That must be so disgusting. Oh, no, 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 no.
Maybe
and you know, I learned something. I was watching a TikTok of a lady who used to be in prison. I don't know what she went into prison for. I think it was petty theft or something. She said, obviously, there's no press stick. right? So you can't stick stuff on the wall. So what prisoners do to, you know, because often in like TV shows, you see like stuff on the walls. Like they use toothpaste.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what they use. They use toothpaste and that's how they stick stuff on their walls. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, you can't exactly kill someone with toothpaste, can you?
Well, so toothbrush, if you make it a shiv, then the toothbrush can be dangerous.
Are they allowed toothbrushes?
Yes!
I'm just shaking.
Next thing, all their teeth are falling out.
Because anything that can be used as a weapon is not allowed.
Yeah, they give them toothbrushes, but then obviously the people sit there and sharpen the toothbrushes. But when they're given, but then we must make give them something that can't be sharpened. It's the same thing when they make like they sharpen the ends of spoons and make this their shivs. And they just stab people. Our guys, prison life must be rough.
Yeah,
it's not for me. And imagine, oh no, and I think the worst thing is I would hate to be sharing a cell with someone. Now you don't know what. Imagine you in there for like stealing a car, and the person you're in with is a murderer. I could not be me.
Yeah, but then I think when they put people in prison, they put you like according to different classes.
Oh, but not even that. Can you imagine the prison yard? How many fights and stuff break out? And
that's just going to happen. Where there's a crowd of people.
Yeah, but it's also cooked up bad people. That's the problem.
You see, also because they're a bunch of cooked up bad people, there's also limits because they know not to just go and start a fight.
Okay, that is true. That is very true. Yeah, but still, guys, it could not be me there. I don't know. I don't even know if South Africa has a female prison. I know we. Wow. I have a prison by. No, I'm being serious. So I have a prison by my house, but that's a maximum prison. But I don't know if that's a female. Or do they have prisons and they just separate the males and the. South Africa female. I'm Googling. Female prison. Guys, whoever watches my Google must think I'd Google the weirdest things. Pretoria Central Prison. Drakensberg Prison.
I think what you should have said.
There are 243 prisons in South Africa, but only 9 are for women. That just
so that means the majority of the criminals are men. But 9 is. No, out of 243. No, that's crazy.
There's 9 women prisons.
That means that there's a lot of. That means there's a lot of women that are getting away with crime.
Why? No, let's just say women behave themselves.
You said 200 and what?
243 male prisons. Okay, no, 200. It would be
no the total.
Yeah, so 243 is the total. So if there's 9 women prison, then there's 234 male prisons. And that's female-centered Johannesburg Prison. So there is one in Joburg. Malmesbury Prison. Pretoria Central Prison. Worcester Female Prison. Swelopele Correctional Center. Westville Female Prison. Polesmoor Female Prison. Drakenstein Prison. And Correctional Services. We have 200. We have over 200 prisons. That's madness.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I learned something today.
Well, if you think of it, it sounds like a lot, but I don't think it's that much. And the reason why, I mean, how many people do we have in our population?
55 million.
So it only makes sense.
Yeah, I suppose that is
and
true.
The different provinces. Well, I mean,
if I'm being honest, I only know of 2 prisons and one of them is closed. The Robben Island isn't open anymore.
Oh. Why did they close it down?
I don't know why they closed it down. But I don't think Robben Island... Cause
I
it's
think
a tourist,
because it became a tourist attraction because of Nelson Mandela.
And then I know the prison by my house, which is...
So they freed criminals.
No, they wouldn't move them. It's like when Alcatraz closed. The people didn't go out of prison. They just got moved. I really didn't realize we had so many prisons.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the one prison by Sun City. There's the Sun City jail.
Yes.
Hey, there's Leeuwkop. Right, it's on the
Sun City is where serious criminals go.
Leeuwkop's also serious criminals. The one by my house. There's the one that we drive past and then the one in the distance. The one we drive past is for petty crimes and then the one in the distance is for serious offences. Yeah, guys, it's fine. Yeah, Wait, let me see. Last thing. Is Robben Island closed? Yeah, closed in 2008. Only 2011. Oh, I thought it was being closed much earlier than that. Jacob Zuma went to Robben Island.
What do you mean?
Apparently he was a prisoner there.
A lot of the political leaders were prisoners then.
Oh, that might have been while he was serving. I don't even know. I always wanted to go to Robben Island.
You want to go to prison?
No, I want to see it. You, let's go. Road trip, let's go. Oh, he's so boring, guys. It's fine. Anyway, that is it for Israel Keys. I feel like we went on a very long tangent about prisons. But we really hope that you enjoyed the show. Otherwise, we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.